If you were to scroll through your news feed right now, or walk down the health food aisle of a grocery store, I guarantee you would find at least three completely contradictory headlines about sugar.
Oh, easily. Probably more.
It's fruit is nature's candy 1 minute, and then the next it's fructose is a toxin, and then you have that eternal, that undying war between high fructose corn syrup and good old-fashioned table sugar.
Right.
It feels like we have this massive collective, it's complicated relationship status with sweetness.
It really is the ultimate love-hate dynamic. We are biologically wired to seek it out. I mean, it's survival fuel after all, but in the modern world, we fear it.
And we argue about it.
We argue about it endlessly because the science, well, it often feels like it's shifting under our feet. One decade, fat is the enemy, the next, it's sugar. It's exhausting.
Which is exactly why we're here today. We are going to attempt to cut through all the marketing and the panic and the industry spin.
I hope so.
We have a pretty massive stack of research on the table to help us do it. We're looking at government health data from the CDC, a major metabolic review on the chemistry of corn syrup versus cane sugar, and some pretty intense physiological breakdowns of what sweets actually do to your liver and kidneys.
And in a twist that I think is going to surprise a lot of people, we are going to look at two brand new studies from 2025 that analyze how sugar affects honeybees.
Bees. I have to admit, when I saw that in the stack, I was confused.
Bees. Because, believe it or not, the way a bee colony thrives or collapses based on the type of sugar they eat tells us something pretty profound about biological energy.
So the mission for this deep dive is to strip away all the noise and look strictly at the biology, from the human liver all the way to the bee's fat body.
Precisely. And the aha moment we're building toward is this. Humans and bees are obviously very different, but that biological struggle to process complex sugars, it reveals a shared truth. Not all energy is created equal. There is a cost to digestion energy you have to spend just to get energy out of your food. And that cost is much, much higher than we think.
I like that. The cost of doing business with your lunch.
Yeah.
Okay, let's unpack this. And I want to start with the villain in the room. The boogeyman of the grocery aisle.
Ah, yes.
High fructose corn syrup.
HFCS, the four scariest letters in nutrition.
For years, I've just operated under the assumption that this stuff is uniquely bad. Like table sugar is an indulgence, maybe a bit naughty, but corn syrup is basically toxic waste.
That's the narrative.
But we have a 2013 review here by Rippy and Angelopoulos that calls this whole thing a perfect storm of confusion.
That is a great way to put it. This review really challenges the idea that high fructose corn syrup is metabolically distinct from standard table sugar, sucrose.
Okay.
They argue that the demonization of HFCS was largely a misunderstanding of chemistry, and it was combined with a coincidence in timing.
So walk me through the chemistry. Because if they aren't metabolically distinct, that implies they look the same under a microscope, right?
Yeah.
At least the body treats them the
Well,
same.
let's look at the molecules. Sucrose, that's your white table sugar from cane or beets. It's a disaccharide. That means it's two molecules bonded together.
Okay.
It's 50% glucose and 50% fructose. Think of them as holding
Right.
hands.
Holding hands, 50-50 split.
Exactly. Now, high fructose corn syrup. It's a liquid sweetener. The most common version, the one in soft drinks, is HFCS 55. So that means it is 55% fructose and 45% glucose.
So, a 5% difference.
Even less in some cases. In baked goods, they often use HFCS 42, which is 42% fructose and 58% glucose.
Wait, so in that case, the high fructose syrup actually has less fructose than table sugar?
Correct.
That feels like a marketing misnomer then. If the ratios are that close, why does everyone act like the corn syrup is nuclear waste compared to cane sugar?
The review points out that biologically, your body absorbs them almost identically. The only real difference is that bond I mentioned. In sucrose, the glucose and fructose are linked.
Right.
In HFCS, they are floating free in the liquid. But here's the thing. Your gut contains an enzyme called sucrase that breaks that bond almost instantly.
So by the time it hits the bloodstream.
Your bloodstream doesn't see a logo. It doesn't know if the sugar came from a corn stalk or a sugar cane. It just sees glucose and fructose. The biological uptake is effectively the same.
But what about the obesity link? I feel like I've seen charts showing obesity just skyrocketing right alongside the introduction of corn syrup in the 70s and 80s. That's a pretty convincing visual.
That's the temporal association the authors talk about. And yes, obesity did rise as HFCS use rose. That correlation absolutely exists.
Oh, yeah.
But, and here is the kicker, HFCS consumption has actually dropped in recent years. Manufacturers started swapping it out because of the bad PR, moving back to cane sugar or other sweeteners.
And did obesity drop?
No. Obesity rates have continued to climb. Yeah. So the correlation broke.
Huh.
So the verdict from this particular source is pretty clear. There is no unique metabolic difference between HFCS and sucrose when it comes to obesity or heart disease, at least at normal consumption levels.
Okay, I hear you. But I want to be careful here. When they say no unique difference, they aren't saying it's healthy.
No, not at all.
They're just saying table sugar is equally problematic.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Just because cyanide and arsenic are different doesn't mean you want a smoothie made of either. The issue isn't really corn versus cane. It's the fructose itself.
Right.
Whether it comes from the white granular stuff or the clear syrup, you are flooding your body with fructose. And that is where the real story begins.
This is where it gets really interesting to me. We have a paper by Mai and Yan from 2019 that dives deep into the liver. And this is where that whole all calories are equal argument seems to just fall apart completely.
It does. To understand this, you have to understand that your body handles glucose and fructose very, very differently. Glucose is the fuel of life.
Every cell in your body uses it. Your brain, your muscles, your heart, they all run on glucose. When you eat it, insulin is released. Think of insulin as the bouncer that manages the crowd.
Yeah, okay.
It tells the cells to open up and let the energy in. It's a highly regulated system.
So glucose has a management team. What about fructose?
Fructose is the wild card. It's not really used by most cells. It heads straight to the liver. And unlike glucose, which has that insulin feedback loop to say, stop, we have enough, fructose metabolism is uncontrolled.
Uncontrolled in what way? Like a runaway train?
Basically. The paper describes a specific enzyme, fructokinase C. This enzyme is responsible for the first step of breaking down fructose. The problem is, it has no off switch.
No off switch?
None. As long as there's fructose in the liver, this enzyme will keep working, pulling energy, specifically ATP, to process it.
ATP is the cellular energy currency, right?
Yeah.
That's the stuff we learned about in high school biology.
Correct. Adenosine triphosphate. It's the battery power for your cells.
Wait, so the liver is spinning its own energy to process the sugar? I thought sugar gave us energy.
It does, eventually, but there is an upfront cost.
Yeah.
And with fructose, the cost is steep. It's depleting its energy reserves. Because there's no feedback loop, if you drink a large soda, the liver just goes into a frenzy.
Wow.
It pulls phosphate from ATP so fast that the ATP levels in the liver crash. It's like a factory running its machines so hard they blow the main fuse.
And what happens when the fuse blows? That sounds catastrophic for a cell.
That's the domino effect.
Yeah.
When ATP drops, the cells get stressed, and they produce a waste product called uric acid.
Uric acid, isn't that what causes gout?
It is, and that's a painful condition in the joints.
Yeah.
But inside the liver cell, high uric acid causes oxidative stress. It actually damages the mitochondria, the power plants of the cell.
Okay.
And this triggers a survival mechanism. The liver basically says, we are under attack, we are losing energy, we need to store everything immediately.
So it creates fat.
It flips a metabolic switch. It blocks the burning of fat, what we call fatty acid oxidation, and turns on the production of fat de novo lipogenesis.
That is a terrifying image.
Yeah.
So when I drink a supersized soda, my liver isn't just dealing with empty calories, it's actually panicking. It's depleting its own energy batteries and creating fat as a defense mechanism.
That is the exact mechanism behind non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, NAFLD. It's a metabolic traffic jam. And it explains why you can get fatty liver even without alcohol. Fructose uses a similar pathway. It's not just about weight gain. It's about cellular stress.
It really reframes the whole concept. It's not just that sugar is fattening. It's that processing it is metabolically expensive.
Expensive and damaging if the dose is too high. And speaking of damage, we need to move downstream. If the liver is the factory, the kidneys are the filter,
right,
and sugar is clogging the filter.
We have this great breakdown from a YouTube transcript that calls the kidneys silent bodyguards.
Wow.
I love that image. They're filtering, what, 50 gallons of blood a day?
Around that, yes. They are incredible, resilient organs. But they aren't designed for the modern sugar load. When your blood sugar is constantly high, the kidneys are forced into a state called glomerular hyperfiltration.
Which sounds like a superpower, but in medicine, hyper usually isn't good.
No, it's not. Think of it like revving your car engine in the red zone all day long.
Ouch.
The kidneys are filtering too much, too fast. They interpret the high sugar and insulin as a signal to work harder. This physically wears out the delicate machinery, the nephrons, over time.
And the source also mentions kidney stones. I usually associate stones with salt or dehydration. I didn't realize sugar was a culprit.
Well, salt plays a role, definitely, but sugar is a sneaky accomplice. High sugar intake increases the amount of calcium you excrete in your urine.
Okay.
And at the same time, it decreases citrate, which is a chemical that helps prevent stones, so you have more calcium and less protection.
So you're actively building the perfect environment for crystals to form. That sounds painful.
It is, but there is a silver lining here, and I think it's important we mention it. The source discusses a 30-day reset.
Okay.
If you cut the sugar, the recovery is actually quite remarkable.
Is it immediate? Or do we have to pay a penance first?
Well, the feeling isn't, no. The first 72 hours are rough.
Okay.
Your brain is used to that quick dopamine hit, so it complains. You get headaches, irritability, cravings. It's withdrawal.
Right.
But biologically, your inflammation markers like CRP drop within weeks. The hyperfiltration slows down. The kidneys literally sigh in relief.
It's amazing how resilient the body is if you just stop punching it in the face.
It wants to heal. We just have to get out of the way. But now I want to pivot because we've talked about human organs, livers, and kidneys, and the cost of processing sugar. But to really see this principle in action, we have to look at a creature that lives and dies by sugar.
We're going to the apiary.
Oh, yeah.
We have two studies from 2025, so brand new research looking at honeybees. And honestly, before reading this, I assumed bees just ate flowers. I didn't realize beekeepers had to be so involved in their diet.
They do. When flowers aren't blooming or over the winter, beekeepers have to feed the colony to keep them from starving.
I see.
Usually they use sugar syrup, but these studies looked at something very specific, inverted sugar syrup.
Okay, we need to define that. We know what sucrose is now, glucose and fructose holding hands. What is inverted sugar?
Inverted sugar is just sucrose that has already been broken apart. You can do it with heat and acid or with enzymes. It's called invert because of the way it rotates light. It's a physics term.
Ah.
But for the bees, the important part is that it is effectively pre-digested.
So the bond is already broken before the bee even eats it.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And this brings us to the first study by Tsvetanov and Bolkanska conducted in Bulgaria. They used war hives.
War hives. Is that significant?
It is for the context of energy. A war hive is designed to mimic a natural hollow tree. The bees build their own comb from scratch. There are no pre-made frames provided by the beekeeper.
So they're working harder.
Much harder. It's a very naturalistic way of keeping bees. But it means wax production takes a lot of energy.
So energy is a premium resource for them. They can't afford to waste it.
Exactly. So in this high-stress environment, they took these colonies and they fed half of them regular sugar syrup, sucrose, and the other half inverted sugar syrup.
And what happened?
The difference was stark. From April to October, the colonies fed the inverted syrup had significantly more sealed worker brood.
Sealed worker brood, that's the pupa, right? Baby bees.
Correct. It's the best metric for how fast a colony is growing. The experimental group, the ones getting the pre-digested sugar, had stronger colonies and way more babies.
So connecting this back to the cost idea, by giving them sugar that was already broken down, the bees didn't have to spend their own energy breaking it.
That's the theory. When bees eat regular sucrose, they have to produce an enzyme called invertase to break that bond. Producing enzymes costs metabolic resources.
Ah.
By giving them inverted syrup, the researchers essentially outsourced digestion. The bees saved that energy and used it to raise more young instead.
That is fascinating. It's almost the inverse of the human liver problem. Yeah. Our liver burns out trying to process the excess fructose. The bees thrive when we remove the processing step for them.
Well, they thrive if the syrup is high quality. And that brings us to the second study.
Right.
This one is by Lazaroff and colleagues, also from 2025. They looked at the bee's fat body.
Okay, I have to ask. Fat body, is that just a chubby bee?
No, it's not just a bee that needs a diet. In insects, the fat body is a specific vital organ.
Really?
Yeah, it's like the human liver and our adipose tissue combined. It stores energy, but it also handles the immune system and synthesizes proteins. It is crucial for winter survival. If a bee has a weak fat body, it won't survive the cold.
So this study was checking to see which diet built the best fat body.
Exactly. They compared different diets, regular sugar, inverted syrup, specifically a brand called Apienvert, and high fructose corn syrup called Isosweet.
The dreaded HSCS returns. Even the bees can't escape it.
It's cheap, so it gets used. And the results are really nuanced. The bees fed the inverted syrup, And honey had the best, healthiest fat body development. They were robust, ready for winter.
And the corn subgroup?
This is where it gets tricky. They actually had very high development, called fifth degree development. So physically, they got fat, essentially. They had the storage.
What?
But the study raised a major red flag about toxicity.
Toxicity from what? The corn?
No, from a compound called HMF, hydroxymethylfurfural.
That is a mouthful.
It is. HMF is a compound that forms when sugar, especially fructose, is heated too much or stored badly in acidic conditions. It is highly toxic to bees.
Wow.
The study warned that while HFCS can provide energy, it is chemically unstable. If it's not handled perfectly, HMF levels can spike and you end up poisoning the hive.
So it's high risk, high reward.
Right.
Whereas the inverted sugar was just clean fuel.
Exactly. Inverted sugar respects the bee's biology. It gives them energy without the metabolic tax of digestion and without the toxicity risk of industrial processing errors.
This is such a cool parallel. We started with humans debating HFCS versus sugar, and we ended up with bees showing us that the form of the sugar dictates the biological cost.
It really brings it all together. Think about the human liver again. We consume massive amounts of sucrose and HFCS. Our bodies have to do the heavy lifting to process that fructose. We pay the cost in ATP and uric acid and liver stress.
And for the bees, when they have to do that heavy lifting producing the invertase enzyme, they have less energy for growth. When we remove that cost, they explode in population.
It's an efficiency equation. It's interesting, in baking, humans use invert sugar like honey or golden syrup because it holds moisture. We use it for texture.
Right.
But for the bee, it's not about texture. It's about survival efficiency.
It makes you think about our own ultra-processed diets. We usually think of processed food as bad. But in the bee's case, the processed inverted sugar was better because it mimicked their natural needs better than raw sucrose syrup.
Well, remember, honey is naturally inverted sugar. Nectar is sucrose, but the bees add enzymes to turn it into honey, which is glucose and fructose.
Oh, okay.
So the processed inverted syrup is actually closer to their natural food than the plain sugar water is.
So we aren't hacking their biology, we are aligning with it.
Precisely. And that's the lesson for humans, too. Our biology is set up for certain metabolic pathways. When we flood the system with concentrated fructose, whether from corn or cane, we overwhelm those pathways. We create a bottleneck in the liver and a traffic jam in the kidneys.
So let's wrap this up. We've covered a lot of ground, from molecular bonds to Bulgarian beehives.
We have. We established that chemically, HFCS and sucrose are practically twins. One isn't the good guy and the other the villain. They both deliver a fructose load that your body handles the same way.
And that handling is hard work. We can't ignore the tax. The liver has to deplete its own energy reserves, its ATP, to process that fructose, which can lead to fat storage and insulin resistance.
And the kidneys get overworked, revving into hyperfiltration mode, risking stones and long-term damage. But as we saw, they can recover if you give them a break.
And finally, the bees taught us that digestion isn't free. Breaking down complex sugars costs energy. When we respect that biological cost by feeding bees inverted syrup, they thrive.
It really changes how you look at a can of soda or a candy bar. You aren't just looking at calories, you're looking at a metabolic work order.
A work order.
You are handing your liver a stack of paperwork and saying, hey, process this immediately, even if you have to shut down the power plant to do it.
That is a haunting image. Here's your metabolic paperwork, and usually we're handing it to our organs about 5 times a day.
At least, and often without even realizing it.
So here's the final thought I want to leave our listeners with today. We spend so much time counting calories, the fuel we put in the tank, but we rarely think about the wear and tear on the engine.
That's the key distinction, efficiency versus endurance.
If honeybees, creatures designed by evolution to eat sugar, do better when we make the digestion easier for them, what does that say about us? We aren't designed to process these massive continuous loads of dissolved sugar. By forcing our bodies to do that heavy lifting every single day, are we essentially burning out our own engines just to stay running?
It's a question worth asking. And right now, I think the data suggests we are trading our long-term endurance for a quick hit of cheap fuel.
Something to mull over the next time you're staring down the sweetener aisle. Thanks for taking this dive with us.
Always a pleasure.
Stay curious, and we'll catch you on the next deep dive.